You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.
Welcome to The Business Wilderness. My name is Ahmed Al-Ghouli, and today I have a very special guest with me, Mr. Greg McLarty. Greg, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Awesome, my man. All the better for being on your program.
It's my absolute pleasure, mate. Greg, before we get into what you're currently working on and what you're currently involved in, I want to go back in time. Who was Greg as a young man at school?
I was born and raised in Sydney. In fact, in Bondi, I lived on the first row of houses in Bondi before it became so rich and famous, or not so much rich, but certainly famous. So went to University of Sydney, did a Bachelor of Economics because I didn't know what else to do. Then I went in and started working with Ernst & Young, which is one of the big three accounting firms, and got my chartered accountancy, but honestly, I really didn't enjoy that. And I didn't know enough about business because my dad worked in charity full time, and so he didn't know enough about business. And he said to me, "Greg, why don't you go to the US and get a Master of Business Administration in the US?" And so I thought that was a ripping idea, and so I ended up going to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Master of Business Administration program. And I tell you what was fun about that, Ahmed, is Michael Jordan was at Carolina at that time.
Wow.
And so I saw Jordan before he became really famous. And that certainly gave me a love of basketball. I ended up being a basketball coach for quite a while. Coming out of that, I was so inspired by them.
So Jordan was studying with you?
We went to university together. I would see him on campus a whole bunch. And he was a bit of a humble guy. He was a cool cat. And he was a really good human being. We just had this Last Dance series. And he comes across as he's certainly full of confidence. He wasn't so full of confidence in those days. He was very humble. But the essence of being a good person, I think, has come through on Last Dance to some extent. And I certainly saw that on campus. I'll never forget, Ahmed, when I graduated from the Master Business Administration program, that there was about eight of us, the graduates. We sat in the student lounge and no one said anything. We were just thinking about what we had just done and what we're doing next. And one of the students, one of my fellow students said, "Well, guys, what do you want to do with your life?" And again, there was silence because that was a pretty heavy question. And we went in turn saying what we wanted to do, and I remember blurting out, Ahmed, that I want to put something together that is a noble organization that will last for generations. And I'd never verbalized that before, and I was 29 at that time, and I'd say to the audience here that Sometimes your dreams and aspirations come to you, but you don't really listen to it. And I didn't have the guts, Ahmed, to listen to it until 20 years later. Then I had the guts. So I took the easy path out of the MBO program instead of following what my heart and soul was saying. I got an amazing job with Procter & Gamble, which is one of the best marketing companies in the world, in Cincinnati in the worldwide headquarters. And because I was with Ernst & Young, they started me off on their finance track. And then And then they asked me to move across into marketing. After 4 years in finance, they asked me to move across to marketing. And that was really unusual back in those days for people to go from finance to marketing. But I got to say, it was like a duck to water. I just loved it. And I learned so much. You know, Procter & Gamble makes fact-based decisions. They're very heavy on research, which helps the fact-making decisions. Very highly brand-driven. And so I learned so much from that. And, you know, Steve Jobs, if your audience has a chance during these COVID days to look at a speech by the Apple founder Steve Jobs he gave at Stanford University. It's less than 20 minute speech. It is extraordinary because he thought he was going to die from cancer, and he gave the speech not long after he discovered that, and it's a really deep speech. But in that he says, he talks about life sometimes throwing a brick at your head. And we all experience that. Anyone who goes down the founder track certainly has bricks thrown at their head because, you know, it's hard. When you try to do something different, everyone wants you to be like everyone else instead of doing something uniquely different. So you're always getting bricks thrown at your head. Steve Jobs said, "You can never join the dots going forward." But he said, "Looking back, I can see how all the different experiences I've had have led me to the success I have developed with Apple and also with Pixar." And, you know, I've had a bit of a different experiences, Ahmed, and I can see now how it's, you know, I made that comment when I graduated in that student lounge about my heart and soul was about having a noble organization that would last for generations. And now that I'm pursuing this, all my experiences from the past are all coming together. It all makes sense now. Like it might sound silly, I mean, but it's almost like it's cosmic. You know, it's weird. Maybe it's just you, the sum of your experience. And so instead of rambling on, I'll let you guide where you want to take it next time, man.
Well, deep, meaningful, insightful. Definitely a lot to capture from that. Talk to me about your current venture.
Yeah, Two Hands. I was, what a journey I've had. There's been so much serendipity, and there's something in that, you know, that there's a connectedness between all of us. We just humans don't understand yet. And there's a guy, David Bohm, he's a Nobel laureate. He studied under Einstein, and he started in his Nobel laureate work. He started studying that there's so many coincidences that scientifically it makes no sense. So he, before he died in the 90s, he started studying why are there so many coincidences. And he was moving into that, gee, there's a connectedness here that we just haven't, we just don't understand yet. And what he said is that a human's understanding of our brains and how it works is similar to when humans back in the 15th century thought the world was flat. So he said, there is so much for us to discover yet. So there's been so much serendipity. So it started off when I'll never forget a phone call I received in mid-December 2016 from a fisher leader in Australian Southern Rock Lobster. And he, his name was Ernie, his wife was Terrell, and I found out that even though every fisher I know is a man, but every time I meet with a fisher, the wife always comes. And I found that while the men are out to sea, the women are a really important part of the business, an essential part of the business. So that's why I call them fishers, because it's inappropriate to exclude the women from that term. And so Ernie and Terrell had just finished a meeting with one of the middlemen in the Southern Rock industry. And this middleman, and what's happened, the middlemen have become bigger and stronger, and have been bought out by some multinationals. And well, where fishers and farmers essentially stay the same size. And so middlemen are becoming more powerful as the producers feel more powerless. And this middleman was saying, you have no choice. You're going to receive a much cheaper price in future. And I'm just here to tell you that's the way it's going to be. So he called me in desperation. He was desperately concerned about the future of the industry for his kids and his grandkids. And I hung up, and I so wanted to help him, but I didn't know what to do. And then that Christmas, we always try to do something different for a family Christmas get together. And I remember when we all caught up as a family, I was the first to wake up on the first morning, and my mind was just racing. And I just had this light bulb moment, Ahmed, where I thought, well, you know, we've booked an Airbnb for a new family experience. I used a book depository to get some books online. Why can't we connect fishers directly with restaurants? Because what happens is that 90% of Southern Rock lobsters sold to China, over 90%, and much of that goes to the restaurant trade. So why can't we connect them directly? And so when I came back, I couldn't wait to come back and talk to the fishers. And so I had a number of meetings with the fishers and the wives, always in their homes, and they told me about their plight, and they told me about their industry, and I told them what I was thinking, and the comment to me was that, wow, you know, connecting directly with the restaurant, having a relationship with the chef and the consumer, now this is the first day of the future of our industry. And so I came to really love these fishers. I realized that no one was fighting in their corner up there. And it's a tough life as a fisher or a farmer. And what I also found out, and it goes across to farmers as well, Ahmed, that to chefs and to final consumers, that technology and globalization has moved to a point, Ahmed, where the fishers and farmers are faceless, their regions are invisible, and the supply chain is a black box. And so it's no surprise in that environment that food fraud is a huge problem internationally. And this COVID-19, SARS and bird flu were all enabled by a lack of transparency and ethics in the food supply chain. And so we've found that we've really resonated with chefs, we've really resonated with producers. And so we have a blockchain, we're using blockchain. We are one of the first, we're a small team, we're based here in Melbourne, but we've also got our team members in Adelaide, Shanghai, and Silicon Valley. Our small team is one of the first to monetize a blockchain solution that is solving a critical world issue. We're one of the first in the world to be doing this. And so we're proud of that. And so we're in the process now of crowdfunding to take us to the next stage, where we're hoping to IPO within the next 12 months to really raise the funds to really scale what we're doing.
Wow, interesting. So there's a few networks that have to be built and developed to establish a business like yours. Take us through some of the challenges that you've gone through to put it all together, because it's not your standard business. There's a lot to solve. The puzzle is always missing a few pieces. Good luck finding them. How'd you put it all together, mate?
Yeah, Ahmed, wow, what a great question. And this is where a lot of it, you just got to use your intuition, and also people, there's a lot of people out there out to help. And so I got to know that official leader who reached out to me. He introduced me to a number of people, a number of other official leaders, and he opened a few doors for us, and those doors have been invaluable. And then because 90% of the product is sold to China, and of that 60% goes to Shanghai, I started taking trips to Shanghai, and there's, surprisingly, you know, it's amazing how Australians travel. I stayed a few times at the Langham in Shanghai, and I got to say, and I've had an opportunity to travel throughout China, and I found that customer service is not part of the Chinese DNA. they're good people, Chinese, really good people. Now they love a laugh, they love a beer, they like talking about family. But customer service is not one of their strengths. And I stayed at the Langham, and the customer service there was extraordinary. And so one day I saw the general manager who was greeting people as they were leaving for the day. And I just walked up to him and I said, hey, I got to say, the service here has been awesome. And he said, you sound Australian. I said, yeah, I am. And his name was John O'Shea. He was a lad from Brisbane, but now traveled the world. And out of just going over and saying that to John, opened up a relationship where they became our first test location. And he couldn't do enough for us.
Wow.
And then he introduced us to other people. And he introduced us to the Australia-China Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai, and that's been amazing for us. And we found out there's about 20 Aussies working in the high-end restaurant hotel industry in Shanghai, and that network has been awesome. Because you need to have friends as you're testing your product, as you're developing your product, you need to have friendlies around you who want to see you succeed. And being in Shanghai, the Aussies there couldn't help enough.
Wow. So talk me through how the fishers now are actually benefiting from your platform. What's the unique proposition that's been now developed?
Yeah. So in a nutshell, fishers and farmers, they make more profit, they get more recognition, they get more respect. Just quickly, I'll describe how it works on that. So blockchain talks about the source of truth. And so if you don't start with the source of truth and then the origins of the product, then food fraud can happen. And so the fisher, let me use lobster as an example. We've got a smart tag that quickly locks onto the lobster so it can't be removed. It's tamper evident. And we know we've got a number on the smart tag, so we know which fisher has been assigned which smart tag. The smart tag has a QR code on it and also RFID capability. That lobster comes to port, and at port, we electronically weigh it and assess quality, and so then we know the fisher, the quality, and the weight, and with pricing, that information is uploaded to our marketplace and is immediately available to the restaurants. So the restaurants place orders. Restaurants in Shanghai place orders directly on our marketplace, and so we secure the funding for the shipment before it leaves. And so what is really important is that we pack for the restaurant in Australia. So when it arrives in customs in Shanghai, it literally goes straight from customs to the restaurant. So there's no importer, no middleman, no last mile distributor. And so we're cutting out 20%, more than 20% of supply chain costs by doing this. And so we're able, as a result, we're able to provide a better profit for the fisher, we're able to provide a better price for the restaurant. And what that does, though, for those of you who haven't read some of the Amazon books, there's some great books on Amazon about how they started off, and Jeff Bezos developed this concept of the flywheel, and so you need to get that flywheel cranking, have it go faster and faster. And so by providing better profit for the producers and a cheaper price for the restaurants, you really get that flywheel going. Then on top of that, we pre-record a video of each producer, of each fisher and farmer, and we have a video of the beauty of the region where the product is harvested. And so the chef, and so not only are the restaurants getting a better price, but the chef and consumer at the other end, they can, because WeChat is everywhere in China, something like over 900 million Chinese have WeChat. So they scan the QR code and they can see when the fish was caught, who caught it. They see a short video on the fisher where he's emotively talking about his love for the industry and why he's in the industry. And we have a video of the beauty of the region. We have a blockchain dashboard. And we can also, because we know the restaurant's going to, we can upload information, video of the chef and of the restaurant as well. And we're just about to start working with the Australian Marine Conservation Society, and they're going to start putting sustainability content that they will manage independently onto our QR code, our COX experience as well. So that's, and so the benefits are, so you see, so for the first time ever, the fisher gets recognition and he's getting respect. He can connect, he can communicate directly with the with a restaurant, and the restaurant, they receive a blockchain authenticated provenance, because a number of chefs in Shanghai, Ahmed, have said to us that the food fraud is so endemic in China that they don't trust anything that comes into their kitchen. So we, for the first time now, they can get blockchain proven provenance, which eliminates food fraud and it eliminates the wet markets.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so that's a benefit to both sides of it.
Wow. There you go. So you're basically empowering both ends of the marketplace, which is phenomenal. How do you guys see yourselves improving your product? Like, at the moment, it's pretty streamlined from what you've just told me. What is the next step?
Yeah, thanks, Ahmed. For your listeners, I'd strongly suggest to listen to a series called Masters of Scale, and it's an awesome series. And in there, they talk about how the really iconic successful digital enterprises have. What I found is that there's tremendous pressure on founders to scale and get tons of people on board. That's a sign of success. Wow, there's a lot of pressure to do that. But the advice that really rings true is that we founders have to push back against that, because what we need to do is that we need to make users truly love our product, like they can't live their days without our product. So we need to build our product to a point where there's this tremendous love for our product. And so the wording we're using within two hands now is that we want to become indispensable to our users being farmers, fishers, chefs and consumers. And so we want to build, and also, you know, I was talking to a Google executive not long ago, who is another Aussie, who was telling me there's not enough apps these days that develop a strong ecosystem around their key users. So we're now moving towards developing a really strong ecosystem around fishers and farmers, a really strong ecosystem around chefs, and we will do that with consumers as well. And so in that, let me take producers as an example. We will, because producers, it's a lonely job being a fisher or farmer, and they're small operators, and so they often form cooperatives to be able to have a feeling of teamness, but also to have some sort of market power. But we can do that. And in blockchain, you can develop communities within blockchain technology. So we can approach financial institutions and insurance and such and say, hey, listen, for all the people in all the producers in our ecosystem, we want you to give them a better deal. Fuel companies, we want you to give them a better deal. Machinery companies, give them a better deal. We can put stuff in there about the best in weather apps. For the first time ever, they can get information about what's happening, because that right now they sell their product when they get to the port, and they haven't a clue what happens after that. So we're going to give them direct input from what's happening in the marketplace, because we're touching both ends. They're craving for that, and we give them traces. And also, you know, I reckon a lot of what's happened with the unethical supply chains have led to COVID-19 and bird flu and SARS is that producers and chefs and consumers have no idea what happens with the supply chain. And so we arm producers and chefs and consumers with the information now where they can see if it's an ethical supply chain or not. And so if producers, chefs and consumers knew their product was going through the wet markets, and I've been to a lot of the wet markets in China, wow, they do need to be cleaned up. There's serious issues there. If chefs and consumers and producers knew it was going through these unethical establishments and supply chains, they wouldn't sell their product there. They wouldn't buy from it there. But right now, because of the black box, they don't know I'm there. So we're empowering that now.
Wow. Awesome. Big question. The current trade tensions the current trade tensions between Australia and China and China and the rest of the world, how does that impact your business?
Yeah, you know, I got to say, over the journey, wow, we found there's so much crap happens. And what I say to my team is that we need to focus on the road ahead. And as we focused on the road ahead, you'll see wrecks on the side of the road from time to time. But if you focus too much on the wrecks on the side of the road, you'll veer off course off the highway. You could become a wreck yourself. And if you look too much in your rearview mirror as to, oh my goodness, COVID-19, I'm a kangaroo with lights and my eyes and the headlights sort of thing. If you focus on the rearview mirror, then yeah, you're going to get veer off the road, off your chosen path, and you're going to have an accident as well. And so it's critical for the founder, the people key to the business, to focus on that road ahead despite all the crap going on. So what I say, Ahmed, is that, yeah, there's stuff going on, and I get it, you know, and I love the Chinese. I really do, person to person, and we've got a team, and we've got a established an office in China now. We've got a company in China, and I love our team to bits. And boy, they love what Two Hands is doing, and they're in fact they're a bigger advocate for what we're doing than the Australian team on it. And so, my advice is to stay focused on the road ahead. And yeah, there's issues with barley and the three to four meat processing centers have been temporarily suspended from exporting. But just, the chefs, because of COVID-19, the chefs have said, hey, listen, what Two Hands is doing really resonates. Please expand your product line. Please move into meat. And so we're actually going to start supplying meat in the next couple of weeks from one of the places that's been suspended. But frankly, there's a number of processes in Australia. So we can, as a founder, as a startup, you have to be. One of our Silicon Valley staff said recently that really critical mindset of a startup is that you're hitting challenges and barriers all the time. There is always a creative solution to every challenge, to every barrier you hit. Always a creative solution. So focus on the creative solution. So we've quickly moved to another processing center down in the south of Australia that hasn't been affected by these. So it's not going to be a hiccup for us. And there's always going to be, in any trading relationship, there's going to be ups and downs. There's always going to be geopolitical fights. And so as a startup, leave the politics to the politicians and just focus on the road ahead.
Great answer. So in your time, you've been through a bit of a journey from an executive to a student to studying with Michael Jordan to having your own startup to traveling all over the world. There's many young people out there who aspire to do the same thing, if not in the exactly same industry, in something else. But the journey most of the time is very similar, just different experiences. Give us a few tips or pieces of advice that you can give to these young founders that are looking to grow such companies. Let's go with three.
First is you have to have grit, resilience, and self-belief in spades. That is always people just say little things that bring you down, and you're always trying to raise money, and there's people just don't return phone calls. I've had a great conversation or whatever, and so you just got to be resilient and have grit and self-belief to just ignore all that and just focus on your journey and finding that. And if you keep on knocking on doors, and you know, I mean, what I say to people is that to try and find your prince, you need to kiss a lot of frogs. And so I've kissed so many frogs, and there's been very few princes that have come up, but those few princes that have come up have been unbelievable.
Yep.
And so have self-belief. Don't be put off by negative comments. Family members will do it to you. Friends will do it to you. And some of the people in the money who have money, they can be heartless. And so don't worry about those doofuses. So they don't have the guts to do what you're doing. You're making a difference. That's what counts. And secondly is remove, in a similar fashion, remove negative people from your life. If you find people being negative, get rid of them. Even if they're family members, get rid of them. And don't let, try to only surround yourself with positive people, and just keep hunting down and so for a founder and for a CEO, actually, one of the most critical roles we have is momentum. So that's point number two, momentum. And so we are responsible for maintaining the momentum with our startup. And so that's got to be your constant mindset. Okay, if we've lost momentum right now, how can I get momentum back? And how can I get it back now? And the third is that just the agile thinking. You need to have agile thinking all the time about, as I said, whenever there's a problem, there's a creative solution. If COVID-19 comes up, wow, you just got to smash all your costs down and so you can operate off the smell of an oily rag. And thank goodness the government's come up with JobKeeper. I never thought I'd say God bless the government, but in this case I have. And so, they're my three.
Wow. Yeah. Very fair points. The one that really stands out to me is your first one. The journey it's never, ever, ever easy. I don't care who, where you're from, what you do, and who, even if you've got a ton of money, it's still not easy. So
let's all get it.
If this in this game you're coming in, it's not for the faint-hearted. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not as attractive as what people make it out to be. You know, that word entrepreneur and startup founder, it got really trendy at one stage. These COVIDs, they clean all that rubbish out. So it's going to be interesting to see who actually survives. Because when I hear of startups running out of money from 3 months of no business, minimal business, 3 months, and these are companies that have raised tens of millions of dollars. I mean, what the hell? That means that these people are just kids. I mean, there's kids. They're not real business founders. They're just in it for the title, and they've been given everything. So one of the positives of COVID is that it's going to clean all that out, which is good.
Yeah, you know, before the podcast started, Ahmed, you and I were talking about, because you've got, the listeners won't see it, but in your Zoom here, you've got the Golden Gate Bridge behind you.
Yeah.
And I'll say to you, Ahmed, that Silicon Valley and San Francisco, wow, what a special place. I would suggest to all founders listening, when as soon as air flights open up again, get across there. It is an extraordinary place, and it's for anyone in the digital world. It's equivalent to what it is for the Islamic community going to Mecca. For the digital community, it's Mecca. And in Silicon Valley and San Francisco, they truly do put founders up on a pedestal. You don't get the snide comments you get in Australia from time to time. You're really on this pedestal, but you'll only stay, to your point on that, you'll only stay on that pedestal. What they really insist on in Silicon Valley, and this should have been one of my 3 points, frankly, is that you've got to make the world, with what we're doing, we've got to make the world a better place. With all the, humanity's on its knees at the moment, Ahmed. Humanity's being tested with this COVID-19. We've all been tested. So we've all got a duty now to make the world a better place. And in Silicon Valley, they keep asking why. Greg, why are you doing this? Why? Okay, you explain that, but why? And so they keep asking why until they get to the deep reason you started up this venture. And if there's not something in that deepness that is making the world a better place, they're really brutal in Silicon Valley, and they'll tell you to rack off. Go back to Australia. And so they, in Silicon Valley, they're adamant that you've got to be on a journey. Forget about putting bucks in your pocket. If you're doing the right thing, that will come. If you're doing the right thing, that will come. But you've got to stay focused on how are you making the world a better place.
Absolutely. Yep. Makes a lot of sense. All right. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Before we wrap things up, where can people find you online?
Okay, we're doing crowdfunding right now with Birchall, and our offer's live right now. We've got our offer document on there. It's wow, it's a huge amount of effort went into that offer document. So all you want to know and afraid to ask about Two Hands. So we're at www.twohands.world. And you'll find a link to the virtual fundraising there. Boy, we would love any help from anyone out there with the crowdfunding.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Greg McLarty from Two Hands, once again, thank you very much for joining me on the Business Wilderness podcast.
Thanks so much, Amit.
You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.